This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And next, of course, that whole perspective of business and what's going on in the economy. SAFTU national spokesperson is Trevor Shaku. Of course, a regular year on Power Perspective. We talk to him all the time. Also, just tonight, with time constraints, we're going to get in as many questions and then let Trevor Shaku go also. But trying to get an understanding of what's going on in the economy. Yeah, the negative GDP figure of minus 0.1%. Quarter on quarter shows also how difficult it has been for the economy to gain momentum. Might still get, though, to that modest 0.9% in 2024, collectively as a whole. But yeah, South African economy, persistent poor GDP growth, the most, almost for me, and maybe also for Trevor and a lot of others, the most significant feature of South Africa's economic performance. Disappointing economic growth of South Africa's macroeconomic performance. I'm wondering what Trevor Shaku reads into all of the numbers and where he sees it. But let me start here with Trevor Shaku in a place of now. Trevor, welcome to Power Perspective. Welcome to Power 98.7. How are you, man?
Good evening, Denzel, and thanks for having
us. Sure, sure. Trevor, does a figure of GDP, as we've seen it today, and the aspect of the economy as it's indicating to us, and you know there are various aspects of whether we can talk about the automotive section, agriculture, mining, and all of those other things, and why we are where we are in essence. But let me start here. Is this a figure that would play a role in the kind of negotiations around, you know, coalitions that are going on at the moment? Is it a factor that would be taken into consideration when people are also making decisions about who they engage with and how they go forward? And is this a factor, a real factor, that needs to be considered in that particular sphere?
Look, I think it would certainly feature there, yeah, especially because the manifestos, which basically elucidate the programs of action of these political parties for the next 5 years, have as an important and critical section of those manifestos, the economic section.
Yeah.
And the essence of that is important, especially if you look at the fact that you have high unemployment, so everybody would have to try to grow the economy and in the process also create jobs. Mm. So certainly this figure is going to feature in this negotiation, and everybody will be saying we can be able to create the economic growth. Mm. And this is the program that we are putting forward that you have to implement in the coalition. So certainly, of course, there are other aspects which will feature in there, but the economic question will be central.
No, I needed to put that to you because that's the scenario in front of us, and you know the economy in essence plays a huge role, and you can see already what business is beginning to suggest how those particular formulas look. Let me ask a question that's related. Persistent decline in per capita income over several years, then South Africans as a whole are becoming poorer and poorer. How, Trevor, do we break out of the low growth trap that we seem to be in, that we can't get out of? And you know, in an uncomplicated way, how do we manage just to break loose and begin to do something That's not as strangling as the figures are over a period now?
Look, I think there are a number of economic instruments which have been utilized, which have produced dismal results in the past period.
Yeah.
And some of those instruments include the macroeconomic, the triad of the macroeconomic tools, the monetary, industrial, and fiscal tools, which have been utilized, and we have as SAFTU categorized those particular tools as neoliberal.
Okay.
Why do we say this neoliberal macroeconomic tools, which the ANC has implemented with much devotion over the past 10 years, have been problematic? I mean, just look at, maybe if we were to go one by one, let's maybe start with the monetary policy. So with the monetary policy, the problem of monetary policy ought to be looked at least at two levels. The first one is the historic consequence that arose out of the repealing of the expense controls in 1995, followed by gradual phasing out of those expense controls in 1996, adopted through GEAR. What had happened after that is that those exchange control retaliation, which made the rent to be freely convertible in the forex market, allowed for the rent to be exposed to vulnerable speculative attacks, which have led to depreciation of the rent. Of course, those who had export-led idea in their heads were seeing that as a good thing, because it would mean that your exports are cheaper, therefore are becoming competitive in the international market. But what it did not take into account is the fact that this is problematic because it is exposing us to some imported inflation through, say, for instance, oil and all of those. So this is the first thing. But secondly, what has happened also with the monetary policy, especially as we see it adopted by Khanyao lately, is that of being restrictive. Is that, but by being restrictive, they are saying that they want to reduce the money supply in the economy, because according to them, the problem of inflation comes from the too much money chasing too few goods. And as a result, they then raise interest rates, and by raising interest rates, they want to reduce the money supply. What is the impact of this on the economy? Mm. It is at two levels. Directly, they forget that in the capitalist system, every business exists on the basis of credit. In other words, small businesses alike, like corporations which are big, exist on the basis of credit. Now, when you increase interest rates, the credit costs are elevated, and as a result, they become higher and unsustainable for smaller businesses. And as a result, these smaller businesses end up closing because of defaults and bankruptcy.
Mm, mm.
And if you look at the statistics of South Africa, liquidations have actually gone up to 513 between January and April. So that restrictive monetary policy is sabotaging businesses. They are saying, no, to anchor the economic growth, you're going to have to support SMME.
Yeah.
But they are actually sabotaging the SMME.
The SARB. So
now,
carry on, Trevor.
Yeah, I just wanted to then bring the other side of the indirect impact.
Yeah.
So the indirect impact is on the household. Now, people might think that no impact on the household is not directly linked to the economy. It is actually directly linked to the economy. Why? Mm. Because a capitalist system is a system that is based on production of goods for purpose of sale. No business person enters the realm of business to produce goods for production.
So that
they can sell them.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if you then raise interest rates and cause the middle class to be overburdened with debt, to leading them to reduce their expenditure power on consumer goods, it means, therefore, you are going to hit aggregate demand, and as a result, the aggregate demand declining will also be a disincentive to the producers of goods and services. So why would business people produce more goods if they're not going to be consumed?
Mm.
Because at the end of the day, they are looking to get these particular goods sold so that after sale, they are able to recoup the earnings. So this is the sabotage of the monetary policy on the economy.
Then do you also look at it as sabotage, Trevor, the sustained fixed investment that's just not then emerging? Because, you know, ideally, and this is what I've heard the finance minister saying, you need 30% of GDP, because that's an NDP target, right? And what we're getting is only 15% of GDP, and that's totally inadequate. So one of the key key ingredients for sustained rapid growth would be high levels of fixed investment. That's not happening. And it doesn't seem to be, you know, it. Whatever is going on there doesn't seem to be materializing in anything. So, you know, that is just, you know, you could call it sabotaging. You could call it people just making, you know, different choices with their money and or just wait and see, you know. But it's been for a while now that you're not getting high levels of fixed investment.
Sure. And that's true. You see, the constant fluctuation, which if measured over a 10-year period, actually reflects a sharp decline.
Yeah.
Is in gross fixed capital formation,
yeah,
as you referred.
Yeah.
But what are the component parts of the gross fixed capital formation?
Yeah.
The component parts of this capital investment is government spending.
Yeah.
General government spending, and then it is government spending, investment, or the government investment in its SOE.
Yeah.
And then it is the private sector.
Yeah.
Now, all of these components have actually declined. The first two, government spending and government investment in state corporations, has declined because, again, of the macroeconomic choices they've chosen. The fiscal policy of the African National Congress lately has been to defund state-owned enterprises. They come, of course, cry that we have been bailing out companies such as SAB, SABC, ESCOM, and all of that.
Mm.
And as a result, we create so many reasons to justify why they should not fund and invest in such corporations. So that is one of the reasons why gross fixed capital formation has declined on the side of government.
Yeah. And third consecutive quarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. This time by 1.8%.
Indeed. You saw that.
Yeah.
The second thing is, and remember, some of these state-owned enterprises, maybe before I step off that point, many of these state-owned enterprises are contributing immensely to total output, which eventually is, of course, measured as GDP. So you are eventually leading to the contraction in the economy by defunding state-owned enterprises. Secondly, the very fiscal policy, again, is sabotaging government spending in public institutions, infrastructure development, and all of that. Remember, those are also anchors in terms of GDP growth. And therefore, if you're not investing in those, by, for instance, in pouring money into health so that you can be able to expand hospitals, ensure that there is, you erase the infrastructure backlog in that, you are creating jobs, but also you are creating value in the process. You also are hiring as many healthcare workers as you should to ensure that you beat the public servant to population ratio in the public service generally.
Mm.
So because of this so-called fiscal discipline that they've been following, because they feel that there are imminent fiscal risks which they have got to avert, they've actually been sabotaging the fixed investment growth. And the private sector, of course, is not helping because it is saying to it is giving a government ultimatum. It is saying to government, you are going to have to guarantee our investment, or we are not going to invest.
Mm.
And what are these guarantees they're looking for? They're looking for all sorts of guarantees. They're looking for state-backed guarantees financially. They're looking for demand guarantees. They're looking even, of course, for political guarantees. But political guarantees, of course, government ought to give anyone that you have got an environment which is stable. But what these people are looking for is that government must even underwrite the investments that they bring. And we've seen this, for instance, in the projects of the independent power producers, where on the National Treasury's budget at the current moment, $179 billion is used to underwrite the risk of the investment of those private sectors, who, by the way, are only contributing less than 6,000 megawatts of electricity. And some of it, by the way, does not even reach the grid because it is wasted. So these are the problems that we have.
Mm.
And in my view, we've got to come back again to blame government, because government policies are the ones which eventually have to guide where investment will come from, but also choose where investment and the sources of those. The idea that you are going to have to eliminate the state out of the economy and only relegate it to creating an enabling environment for the private sector to play is not going to work. Mm. And we've seen it not working. If you go into GAE, I was reading GAE yesterday.
Yeah.
If you go into GAE, Growth, Employment and Redistribution Strategy of 1996, that macroeconomic strategy has everything that you find in the NDP, has everything that you find in the Economic Construction and Recovery Plan of 2020, has everything in what I've seen in the manifesto of the ANC. Nothing is going to change with this guy, except, and the trajectory of the economic growth is also not going to change, except they change the economic policy framework.
Then Trevor, before I let you go, and I'm going to let you go in a second, just answer this as briefly as you can. The finance minister says earlier this year that over the next 3 years, South Africa's economy is forecast to grow at an average of 1.6%. And that didn't even take into consideration the kind of coalition talks and the kind of, you know, scenarios that we are having now. What is the silver line in all of this? Do you think?
Look, I'm not even sure whether the... Look, we are going to emerge with a coalition government.
Yeah.
That one is for sure.
Yeah.
The type of a coalition that we will merge with, I think, will guide whether we can be able to attain that 1.5 or 1.8 and even go beyond it.
Yeah.
And I don't think these people should be even aiming for such a low growth, in my view, because...
Yeah, because that's it. That is it. 1.6%.
Indeed.
Yeah.
It's a seriously low growth. They should be aiming for 5-7%.
Mm.
And in that, they should not just be looking for a nominal growth, but they should be looking for real growth, the actual production of goods and services. Because that, in our view, is a proper measure of the economic growth. And you see, what they do is that you see the methods they use about per capita income, per capita what. You know, when they come and say per capita income, or per capita GDP, per capita, blah, 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 what they do, they actually, they are misleading us, because quite often what they are doing there is just to take the total number of nominal output growth and divide it by the population and say to you, this is GDP per capita.
Mm.
And then they go take the national income, divided by the population growth, the total population, and say this is your per capita income.
Work it per formula, yeah.
Yes, but in actual fact, we know that that income will never be distributed to each and every one of us. In fact, it is concentrated in the hands of the few. Just like EGDP, we might see EGDP growing, but that might actually not reflect real growth, because either it might be because the monopolies and oligopolies are colluding to raise prices. Remember, these things are merely measured in terms of value, and value is measured through prices. So in that context, you have an illusory growth that is recorded. But what we are looking for, of course, is a proper growth. And we think that a coalition government that ought to emerge out of this ought to aim for reindustrialization of the economy, embark on fiscal expansion rather than fiscal contraction that the ANC has been embarking on, must aim to ensure that the state reinvests back into its own state-owned enterprises and expands the capacity of Eskom, not only in terms of the fossil fuel fleet we have at the current moment, but mostly expand that, not only in fixing the fossil fuel fleet we have, but also expand the capacity for renewable energy. And in our view, if you look at the contributing industries, which has contributed to the decline at the current moment, amongst them is electricity, construction, and manufacturing. Mm. Now, manufacturing is very key for us because manufacturing is not only about production of value-added goods, but it is also about creating sustainable jobs. Most of the sustainable, better-paying jobs, you find them in the manufacturing sector or in government. Now, you have to concentrate on reindustrializing the economy and ensure that you recover the jobs that we have lost. You know, Denzel, in 2007, before the global financial crisis, South Africa's share of employment from manufacturing sector was 1.9 million. Today, as we speak, me and you, it is standing at 1.5 million. This means that we have never, in the past 15 years, been able to recover the jobs we have lost there because we have failed to reindustrialize the economy. And they are clear cut out of this. Although the ANC government and its policies have actually precipitated this problem, in my view, because what you have is that our economy is still based on extractive material, so export-led extractive materials. But you are not able to develop the secondary sector to beneficiate those minerals, the manufacturing sector to manufacture, refine, design, and make products. I mean, if you take, for instance, one, let's say, nickel, or you take chrome, you might find that there are actually seven steps before it is completed into a finished output. And in that context, if you do not develop a manufacturing industry for chrome, you are losing job creation in the process at seven steps. You are losing output production at seven steps, and all of that. So you are making the economy to miss the chances of growing. Of course, ideologically, we call that neocolonialism, where our economies perpetually are put to merely produce and supply Western European countries, or wherever. Now we also supply the East. Wherever the country is, or wherever the multinational corporations of capital are across the world, we only are able to perpetually produce and provide extractive materials to those people, but we're not able to build the industries in our own country. So this is because of the misnomer of the fiscal, monetary, and the industrial policies which have been disastrous of the ANC. So we've got to change them. Whatever coalition government has to fix this. We don't think the DA, by the way, is going to resolve this. The DA just wants to continue on market liberalism, and therefore is not going to. Maybe we can talk about governance, but when it comes to economic policy, we know they've put this in their manifesto. They are not going to move towards such particular form of industrialization because they want to appeal to multinational corporations. And
free market,
free market, and create what they call is an enabling environment or attractive environment for foreign direct investment. So they are still export-oriented to a certain extent and want to develop the economy by appealing to international capital.
Trevor Shaku, you know, just to elevate your point on the production supply side, manufacturing down, mining down, construction down, largest, and you were talking about manufacturing, the largest negative contribution to that decline is manufacturing, in essence, that's sitting at 1.4%, mining 2.3%, and construction 3.1%, all in the wrong direction.
You see, so that's the reality of our economy.
Yeah.
That's the reality of our economy. So we hope that any coalition that emerges out of this really comes up with a proper economic model to ensure that we steer the economy in the direction of growth, development, and job creation.
Trevor Shaku, thanks a lot, Burud, and thanks always for making yourself available here on Power Perspective. It is appreciated.
Thanks, Brother Denzel, and to your listeners.
Sharp, sharp, bro. Trevor Shaku is SAFTU spokesperson talking to us there about, the economy.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.